The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
How do you feel about the first year of your second term?
Amazing. Tomorrow is the first year. Think of it. 1 year. I don't think there's been a term like it. I don't think any president has had a better first year than we've had in terms of success. Again, we've taken our country from a failure with open borders, no business, everything going badly, terrific inflation, the highest inflation in history. Prices that are through the roof, and we brought prices down. We have very little inflation. We have a great economy, and the prices are coming down still further. But I inherited a mess, and now we have the hottest country anywhere in the world. Our country is doing very well. We have many, many buildings opening, factories opening. We've never had anything like it, and I think you're going to see results very soon. You're already really seeing them. But we have more money being invested in our country than any country in history. I don't know if you want to say a couple of words, Doug, but you might want to say how well we're doing as a country. There's never been anything like it. The money being invested in our country is unparalleled. There's never been anything even close, by many times more than China or any other country. Well, I think I have a lot of messages for Davos, but the primary message is how well the United States is doing. And I say it all the time. A year and a half ago, we were a dead country. And now we have the hottest country in the world. I mean, we are just doing great. So I think the message at Davos, we're leaving, going to have an interesting time. We have a lot of meetings scheduled. But the message for Davos is how incredible our country is doing.
It's interesting when you contrast it with the message for the leaders at Davos regarding how their country's doing. And how I'm going to slap more tariffs on them as well. On the one hand, it's, hey, U.S. never been better. And we'll go through some of the successes. I mean, this is the fulfillment of God intervening to save America. He's not going to use Jeroboam to save the world, however. Just America. That's what it says in the scriptures. But even if you leave aside the prophecies and what we know about the Holy Roman Empire in Europe, I mean, just think about human nature being what it is. You're being told from this world leader, the most powerful leader on earth at the moment, you're being told that America's never been better, and hey, you guys, you need to pick it up. You're doing pretty bad. I mean, in a lot of ways, Europe is being humiliated. Even the force they sent to Greenland, just a couple dozen people, really? They're being exposed. They're being exposed for weakness, for division. But that's all about to change, and it's going to change fast. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at our Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. Make sure you tell your friends about the program. Lots and lots to get to on this another anniversary day. 1 year ago today, we should have collected some footage from the inauguration. But a lot has happened this past year. A lot of successes covered at the Daily Wire, covered at Axios, covered at a lot of news outlets because of this 1 year anniversary. But I would submit to you that the most significant development, at least from a prophetic standpoint, is what Donald Trump is single-handedly doing to accelerate the formation of the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. That's right. And I mean, from a prophetic standpoint, as I say, that is electrifying to think about what is going on behind closed doors in Europe at this moment. I mean, President Trump's sending out tweets or messages that he's getting from, you know, European officials, elites. And he's just showing the whole world how that they, you know, they flatter him privately. When they're talking to him, that is. When it doesn't involve Donald Trump directly, what do you suppose they're saying? You see the French president Macron, he's already saying, I don't want to meet with Trump at Davos. We'll see. The public statements, they have to be countered with what you know is going on in private. Of course, we have insights because of Bible prophecy, but also just understanding human nature, as I say. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but first, I'll focus on the positives. If there's one thing about Donald Trump, I mean, he is almost relentlessly positive, optimistic, Pollyanna-like. I mean, it is everything that is happening is, I mean, it's a grand slam. And a lot of that's motivated by vanity, as we know. But there's also some truth to the fact that he's shut the borders. Daily Wire has a pretty good rundown. It says November was the seventh straight month of zero releases in the U.S. In the first 10 months of Trump 2.0, CBP said there were fewer apprehensions than 1 month under Biden. Than 1 month. I mean, it just stopped immediately. Remember, before Donald Trump came back for the second term, remember all of the arguing in D.C. and the swamp, all these people saying, well, this is what we need to do to reform immigration, and, well, this is what we need to change, and we need to put more money into it. They just, Republicans, too. They argued back and forth, back and forth. And then one individual gets in there. God sent him. And it stops just like that, just like turning off a faucet. It's over. Now the fight is what to do with, you know, the ones that are here because of Joe Bama, the millions and millions that are here. And to see some of these protesters in Minneapolis just sobbing over a rapist being detained. We have a little montage, by the way, that we put together. Our own roving reporter in Minneapolis when the troop was up there on Sunday. If we have time, I'll get to that at the end of the show. But just to go through again some of these highlights is the way the Daily Wire would see it. Trump has purged diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and policies from government agencies and academic institutions. One of the radical political theories and social experiments he lambasted in his second inaugural address. He's removed so much of the transgender craziness, derangement. Transgender programs all across the U.S. have shut down or ceased offering dangerous hormones to children. He's worked with his education secretary to try to shut down the education department, because it's useless. It's a waste of money. It's not helping to improve education. You would think the education department would help to improve education across the country, but that's not the case. He's de-wokeified the military. Axios says that Trump 2.0, and keep in mind, we're just 1 year into it, Trump has erased the Biden presidency. I mean, that is the fulfillment of God intervening to save America because of all the bitter affliction. It was very nearly blotted out. And Axios says in 1 year, what's been blotted out is the fake presidency of Joe Biden and the puppet master, Barack Obama. Listen to Axios. President Trump has spent his first year in office treating Joe Biden's presidency as a historical aberration, not just undoing his policies, but casting his entire term as illegitimate. I mean, the portrait that he has in the White House is not of Joe Biden, it's of Otto Penn. It was an aberration. It was worse than that. It was illegitimate. It was a curse. This is from that Axios article. Trump has slammed the brakes on U.S. climate and clean energy policy, reshaping markets for EVs, wind, and other low-carbon technologies. Far beyond undoing Biden-era subsidies and rules, the White House is aggressively wielding federal power to choke off disfavored technologies and rip out climate policy at the roots. Bold, audacious. Axios says Trump has unleashed the biggest changes in U.S. healthcare since the Affordable Care Act. Talks about all of RFK's sweeping vaccine and regulatory overhauls. A focus on improving Americans' health. I mean, that's refreshing. I've had quite a few segments on this that it just always seems to get pushed to the end of my stack of notes. But RFK has been pretty active too. And then, of course, when you start considering some of the mistakes, or when you start considering how he's single-handedly accelerated the formation of the Holy Roman Empire, and to accelerate the appearance of the Daniel 8 man and Antiochus. If you think about that side of it, you know, what's happening abroad? Well, the push, so much of it's driven by the push for peace. Elusive peace. This is, he had a press gaggle last night. I think he went down to that college football game and then left for Davos thereafter. And here's what he said at the airport, clip two.
And I think I've saved tens of millions of lives. If you look at India, Pakistan, just as one, two nuclear powers, you look at so many of the countries that were in a 35-year war, and I got it done. We stopped 8 wars, and maybe we'll be stopping a 9th. Very soon. We'll see.
He's almost obsessed with stopping wars, but as you know, the reality is something different. I'm sure he's brought two sides to the table on occasion. Witkoff is certainly out there working to that end. But like the latest one with the Gaza plan, does it help Israel? Does it help Israel-U.S. relations? Or does it hurt them? I mean, in a lot of ways, the Board of Peace is already a failure because Hamas still exists. It wasn't that long ago when that was like a prerequisite to any agreement. Hamas has to be destroyed. It didn't happen. It didn't happen, did it? I mentioned yesterday on the show what President Trump said last week, after he accepted that Nobel Peace Prize from the opposition leader from Venezuela. And I think I read it to you yesterday, but here's, just so that you can hear it again, these are two people, the woman who's angling for some kind of a position in the new Venezuela, and then President Trump, as they talk about him being more deserving of a Nobel Peace Prize than anyone in history. Clip four.
Yesterday you accepted Maria Machado's Nobel Prize medal. What do you intend to do with it, and why would you want someone else's Nobel Prize?
Well, she offered it to me. I thought it was very nice. She said, you know, you've ended 8 wars, and nobody deserves this prize more than you do. And I thought it was a very nice gesture.
Nobody in history. Wow. That's the positive energy and also the confidence. Some would say overconfidence. Well, we would say that. On display every day. What are you going to tell everybody when you see him at Davos? I'm going to tell them that we're the hottest country in the world. We've got the best economy. We've got more investment in the country than ever before. And of course, they're going to all what? Just pat him on the back? I'm not saying there isn't flatteries. The Daniel 8 man's going to get in there with some flatteries of his own. But what are the actions? What are the actions? And what about human nature? How does human nature respond to being humiliated? To being made weak? I mean, European leaders were humiliated just last summer when they came to the trade deal. They came groveling before President Trump. That was just 6 months ago. Now Trump's saying, hey, deal's off. Deal's off. I'm going to slap more tariffs on because of Greenland. I mean, even Ursula von der Leyen saying earlier today at Davos, if you can find that one, I think it's play clip 8.
That Arctic security can only be achieved together. And this is why the proposed additional tariffs are a mistake, especially between long-standing allies. The European Union and the United States have agreed to a trade deal last July. And in politics, as in business, a deal is a deal. And when friends shake hands, it must mean something.
She's right. I mean, she's right. President Trump agreed to it. President Trump, again, he brought them to the table. He negotiated a deal in July. And now he's saying, what did he say to about Emmanuel Macron, who wasn't going to be, or said something like he wasn't going to want to be on the so-called Board of Peace. And President Trump talked about putting a 200% tariff on champagne and wine. If you can find that one, play that clip.
Hearing on Fox, President Macron saying he will not join the Board of Peace.
Did he say that? Well, yeah. Nobody wants him because he's going to be out of office very soon. You know, that's all right. What I'll do is if they feel like Costco, I'll put a 200% tariff on his wines and champagne, and he'll join. But
what about Macron saying he doesn't want to be on the Board of Peace? Well, nobody wants him. He's going to be out of office soon. If he's hostile, 200% tariff. What about the deal, though, last summer? What about the deal? The handshake in July? And then more importantly, what do European leaders or elites think about President Trump's deal-making? And now these threats of raising tariffs in February, and then even higher in June or July, I think it is. If he doesn't get Greenland, I mean, the events are moving along with pace. That's for sure. This Daily Wire piece, through strategic military action and negotiations, Trump aims to achieve what he said would be his proudest legacy, that of a peacemaker and a unifier. He sees himself as a unifier. He's making peace. But listen to the war of rhetoric. I don't know if I've ever seen it. This abrasive, this contentious. We're awesome. We're great on the one hand. But you guys are terrible. Nobody likes you. Nobody wants you on the board. We don't want your wine. We don't want your champagne. We're going to slap you with tariffs. It's pretty amazing to watch this. Says the Dems flying monkeys in the mainstream media are constantly going on about Trump's dark vision for America. Here was part of my view on that. Far from having a dark vision, this is from PJ Media, President Trump is one of the most upbeat presidents in my lifetime regarding the United States, its place in history, and its potential. You see, he is. He's positive. He's patriotic. But it's like the point we made the other day. I mean, you can be an Antiochus who hates the country, and curses are still going to set in no matter what you do to try to impose your fundamental transformation on it. God's view was that it's bitter affliction. Well, now you've got someone who's very optimistic and positive, who loves his country, obviously. He's a patriot. But in so many different ways, the fulfillment of end-time prophecies, it's accelerating. World events are intensifying. We're drawing very near to the end of this age. And now you can see what would set off the explosion of violence between Europe and the United States. Just seeing the way, there's another article I have later in my stack that talks about how that Europe, if Europe was really concerned about securing its borders, it wouldn't be so much concerned about Greenland as it would be about their own nations in Europe, where they're just opening the doors to millions and millions of immigrants, mostly Muslims. And that's going to cause some problems for those European nations. But why are they so angry over Greenland? It's got 50,000 people there. It's a frozen tundra. They're angry because of Trump. Isn't it interesting? The Trump derangement syndrome that we saw for so many years, driven by an Antiochus type here in the United States. I mean, Trump derangement is going to be driven by another Antiochus. Only it's going to be on the world scale. It's all things Trump. Trump wants Greenland? Well, we're concerned about Greenland all of a sudden. It's leading to war. A war of rhetoric, a trade war. That results eventually in a hot war. And we're seeing all of these wars that precede the hot war. How is human nature going to respond to being humiliated? What is the Daniel 8 man thinking at this moment? If it's Zu Gutenberg, well, we already know he hates Trump. Just imagine what happens when he gets in there. There's the mind change. I mean, people are... I was telling the news gatherers this morning, you know, Trump should pull back on the abrasive language. He's the humiliating that he's, and out in the open showing their tweets and so on and so forth, or their private messages. But at the same time, you look at some of the European elites and, you know, they don't exactly make it difficult for Donald Trump to mock them. But listen to the words and above all, judge by the fruits, the actions. This is from the gaggle last night, clip three.
What do you plan to say to European leaders in Davos when they push back on your Greenland plan?
Well, I don't think they're going to push back too much. Look, we have to have it. They have to have this done. They can't protect it. Denmark, they're wonderful people. And I know the leaders are very good people, but they don't even go there. And, you know, because the boat went there 500 years ago and then left, that doesn't give you title to property. So we'll be talking about it with the various people. We've had tremendous success, and I've done more for NATO than anybody else. I don't think you'd have NATO right now. I got them to go 5% and pay, as opposed to 2% and not pay. I've done more than any other American president for NATO by far, and we'll see how that goes. But
again, from his perspective, he's done more for NATO. They're paying their fair share. From his perspective, it's getting better. But then look at it from the other nation's perspectives. This is from Truth Social, from President Trump. Shockingly, our brilliant, and he's got brilliant in scare quotes, our brilliant NATO ally, the United Kingdom, is currently planning to give away the island of Diego Garcia. So he's calling them out. And again, how's Britain going to react to that? You already see Canada, as I mentioned yesterday, is reaching out to China. The message is, hey, if you're not going to be a reliable trade partner, or if you're going to go back on your word, then we're going to look for other customers. And then with Mercosur, I can't say that acronym for some reason, but anyway, it's this conglomerate, a trade alliance that is opening the way for the United States and Britain to be frozen out. I touched on that yesterday. In any event, that statement on Truth Social about the brilliant NATO ally, what he said about Macron, we don't want him anyway. Part of you just, it wonders if President Trump is being this provocative because he wants a powerful German war machine. He wants a European empire that can take care of all these other problems around the world. And that statement, you know, that he made earlier in this first term. What was it, back in June, where he talked about encouraging Germany? If you have that clip, you can play it too. Encouraging Germany to build up its military, but, you know, not too big.
Is Germany doing enough on defense?
Is Germany doing enough on defense?
The Chancellor wants to spend 3.5.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't discussed it very much. I know that you're spending more money on defense now, and quite a bit more money. That's a positive.
Definitely.
Thing. I'm not sure that General MacArthur would have said it's positive. You know, he wouldn't like it, but I sort of think it's good. You understand what I mean by
Absolutely.
That?
I understand.
He made a statement, never let Germany rearm. And I said, I always think about that when he says, sir, we're spending more money on defense. I say, oh, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a good thing. But, you know, at least to a certain point. There'll be a point when I'll say, please don't arm anymore if you don't mind.
Disagrees with MacArthur and Churchill, by the way, Roosevelt, all of them. That statement is going to come back to haunt him. What he said right there last summer, the German war machine, nobody cares about it. I mean, here in America, we're still kind of focusing in on ICE, Minneapolis. And here the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire is forming. A German military machine is being constructed. They're using the factories. They're switching them over to military production. And it has President Trump's blessing, as you just heard there. Yeah, I think it's a good thing. These leaks. Message from Mark Rutte. I think he's the one that heads up NATO. Another one he leaked on Truth Social from Emmanuel Macron, saying he wanted to get together for dinner in Paris and praising Donald Trump. I mean, the flattery is pretty obvious when you look at the way they talk to him in private. But then for him to reveal these messages, make it right out in the open, to say what he said, well, you've heard it already. This was Ursula von der Leyen earlier today at Davos, clip 5.
1971 was the year of the so-called Nixon shock. And the decision to de-link the U.S. dollar from gold. In an instant, the foundations of the Bretton Woods system and the entire global economic order set up after the war effectively collapsed. But it also had two major effects. It inadvertently created the conditions for what would become a truly global order. And it provided a sharp lesson for Europe and on the need to strengthen its economic and political power. It was a warning to reduce our dependencies, in this case, on a foreign currency. The world may be very different today, without any question, but I believe the lesson is very much the same. That geopolitical shocks can and must serve as an opportunity for Europe. And in my view, the seismic change we are going through today is an opportunity, in fact, a necessity, to build a new form of European independence. So when I use this term, European independence, around a year ago, I was surprised at the skeptical reactions. But less than 1 year on, there's now a real consensus around this. The sheer speed and almost unthinkable scale of the change have driven this, but the underlying imperative is still the same.
No more skepticism. Things are really accelerating now. Everybody's on board. I mean, Daniel too says it's a mixture of iron and clay. So they're still going to have to sort some things out. There's going to be a downsizing of the empire, a new form of European independence. That's where they're going. And she brings up some good history. You know, there can be earth-shaking developments, like when the decline of the dollar set in 1971. And you know you need to be independent. You can't be dependent on America for the dollar. Now, again, from 71 to now, I mean, you could say, well, boy, it's just taken so long. What makes you think that it's really moving fast now? Well, just step back and look at the past 50 years or so. It's been moving fast. Everything that Herbert Armstrong said about his signature prophecy, the formation of a union of nations in Europe with a common currency, with a common government, and finally a common military. All of the militaries in Europe are about to join together. They're about to join on with the German war machine that's being constructed, even as we speak. And it's receiving Jeroboam's blessing. In fact, as I say, you wonder if so much of the provocation is aimed at getting Europe to get its act together, so to speak. This is also from von der Leyen at Davos, clip 6.
If this change is permanent, then Europe must change permanently too. It is time to seize this opportunity and build a new independent Europe. And ladies and gentlemen, this new Europe is already emerging. On Saturday, I was in Asunción, in Paraguay, to sign the EU-Mercosur trade agreement. It was a breakthrough after 25 years of negotiations. And with it, the European Union and Latin America have created the largest free trade zone in the world, a market worth over 20% of global GDP, 31 countries with over 700 million consumers, aligned with the Paris Agreement. So this agreement sends a powerful message to the world that we are choosing fair trade over tariffs, partnership over isolation, sustainability over exploitation, and that we are serious about de-risking our economies and diversifying our supply chains. And that will not stop in Latin America.
Translation for Donald Trump. If you're going to go back on your word, we had a deal in July. Well, they had a deal on Saturday, January 17th, as it happens, the largest trade deal in history. They were going at it for 25 years to try to come to a deal. And it happened the day after that 40-year anniversary of Mr. Armstrong's death. We have an article at the Trumpet website, by the way, Richard Palmer. Did the world turn this January 16th? Well, it did. And as Mr. Palmer brings out in his piece, I mean, how are we going to view what happened over this past weekend, 6, 7, 8 months from now? This trade deal, he talks about Greenland. He talks about some other things that have happened just over the last week. It's speeding up. This is from, I guess, just to finish off, from Ursula. Well, maybe I can skip ahead. This is from the Free Press. Now, this guy, what's his name? Rob Dreher. He voted for Trump. He loves Trump. But he's writing about the Greenland thing. He says, I voted for Donald Trump in 2020. And after moving to Hungary in 2022, I supported his election in 24 from abroad. I also agree with Donald Trump that it is strategically important for the United States to acquire Greenland. Okay, the need for that, it is strategically important. He's right about that. It says, but with his latest bid to use tariffs to extort Europe into selling Greenland to America, Trump seems to have lost his mind. What is happening here? Why is he going about it this way? I mean, It's one thing to talk about it behind closed doors and deal with it maybe discreetly. But why so hostile? Why so provocative? Why so much contentious back and forth? Verbiage, rhetoric. Why the war of words? He says Greenland belongs to Denmark, and while the U.S. should do everything possible within moral and legal limits to persuade the Danes to sell it to America, what Trump is doing now is at the very least immoral. That's the way Europe views it. At the very worst, it risks destroying America's reputation abroad. I mean, you heard Ursula say, look, you made a deal with us in July. You mean your deals only last as long as you want them to? As long as you feel like it? That's the way European elites are thinking. And the ones that send those private messages of flatteries, in their heart of hearts, they despise the bad orange man. You can be sure. You can be sure. There's another wave of Trump derangement syndrome that's about to be unleashed out of the heart of Europe. And to think, as I said yesterday on the show, that somehow Greenland would be the spark that sets this off. One of our news gatherers, hey, Mr. Blondeau, if I can find this. He's an avid reader of history, loves history. And he says, the Greenland crisis is the modern Suez crisis of 1956. The Suez crisis officially ended the British Empire. When Britain and Israel seized back the canal from Egypt, it was a decisive military operation. However, the U.S. under President Eisenhower threatened Britain and forced them to give it to Egypt. Canada also played a key role in undermining Israel's control in Sinai and Britain's control of the Suez. It says the failure for the UK to control the Seagate was the beginning of the end for the British Empire. There's a similar crisis over Greenland, only this time America is going to be punished over Greenland. It may be the end of the American superpower. We don't know how all the details are going to unfold. And there, I mean, that 2 Kings 14 section talks about Jeroboam expanding Israel's borders. But how does Greenland turn into such a hotspot overnight? It's awakening Europe. It's not just the United States that's getting behind Mr. Trump and saying, yeah, it's going to happen. I mean, I'm seeing more and more columns. I think this Greenland thing's going to go forward. We'll see what it does to the formation of that European superpower. This free press piece, at the very worst, it risks destroying America's reputation. It threatens European sovereignty and drives European voters away from the right at the very moment when right-wing parties in several key countries are on track to take power. Well, who knows how the political impact will be from this, but I mean, what we're focusing on is the Daniel 8 impact. And this man that comes in, this strong man, through flatteries, Nigel Farage, he's another Trump supporter, or has been for years. And over on GB News, he had the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. I guess he's in Europe at the time, or at this time, in Britain, perhaps. But he sat down with Farage and listened to what Nigel Farage had to say over this Greenland controversy. Clip 12.
You know, many of these structures are imperfect, but basically NATO's been quite a good anchor. Yes, of course, the Europeans haven't paid enough and Trump's done well to get them to pay more. This is the biggest fracture in our relationship between our two countries since Suez in 1956. This is serious. And you're here about to speak before Parliament. I mean, is there nothing that can be done here?
The biggest fracture in U.S.-European relations since the Suez crisis in 1956. We're getting some pretty good history from the last century from some of these clips. 1971, the demise of the dollar. You can't trust America. The big, I mean, this is huge. Since 1956, listen to Ursula as she talks about Europe speeding up this development of the so-called new form of European independence. Clip 9.
Ladies and gentlemen, when I started preparing for this year's address, security in the high north was not the main theme. But in many ways, it feeds into the wider point I started with today. That Europe must speed up its push for independence, from security to economy, from defense to democracy. Having the dialogue with our friends and partners, also if necessary with adversaries. The point is that the world has changed permanently and we need to change with it. And therefore, thank you and long live Europe.
Earlier today at Davos, in the Free Press, it says, it'd be nice if the European leaders cared half as much about guarding the borders of their own countries as they do about defending the borders of Greenland from the Sultan of MAGA. But it's not difficult to understand their reaction to Greenland, the Greenland Gambit. No country likes to be bullied or humiliated, especially when it involves losing territory. Trump might win Greenland in the near term, but if so, the long-term loss to America's position among its for now allies and to the strength of imperiled Western civilization will be profound. This guy, as I say, he's a Trump supporter. And the headline for his piece, Trump can't win Greenland without losing Europe. Who would have ever thought? Losing Europe. And here Ursula von der Leyen is basically saying the plan is in place and now everybody's in agreement. Now there's no skepticism. Now there's nobody holding it back. It's an empire just waiting for its emperor. And then all of a sudden, I mean, you're going to probably hear us on this program going to, you know, Daniel 2 and Revelation 17, 13, all the time. And we'll begin to sound like a broken record. Even if nobody listens, even if everyone's head is in the sand. I mean, in some ways, Greenland is a distraction. This, I mean, the biggest split between America and Europe since 1956. And then, as you heard in that clip from last summer, Donald Trump there saying, yeah, I think it's a good thing. Build your empire. Build your military. Well, Germany's going to do more than that. Germany's new war machine is going to join together with nine other kings. 10 kings are talked about in Revelation 17. And they come together for a brief time. They have one mind. And a lot of that mindset is TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, on a worldwide scale. He can't be trusted. He's unhinged. He's lost his mind. That's what they'll say. And of course, we'll say, yeah, we've been there before. We've seen this happen. History, even recent history, repeating itself. He's a threat to civilization. He's a fascist. He won't keep his word. Listen to one more bit from Nigel Farage, clip 13.
The trouble is, taking out the enemies of the West is one thing. Alienating other members of the West who've been your best allies is quite another. And by the way, I get it. I get it about Greenland. I get it about the ice caps melting. I get it that, you know, the high north is a risk area. But let's be frank. You know, friends can disagree in private, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And that's part of life, part of politics. But to have a US president threatening tariffs, unless we agree that he can take over Greenland by some means, without it seems even getting the consent of the people of Greenland, I mean, this is a very hostile act. There's no other way I can put it.
There's no other way to put it. says the Trump-supporting Nigel Farage. These are hostile acts. Why would you do this to a traditional ally? I've been telling you for weeks and weeks and weeks that President Trump gives the war machine perfect cover. It's a perfect excuse. It's like every week, maybe faster, there's another convenient excuse for Germany to say, yeah, let's, you know, there would be a lot of European neighbors in other times, going back a decade or two or three, there would be European neighbors that would be wary of Germany taking the lead in Europe, especially if it's building a war machine. But not now. I mean, you've got the orange Hitler. He's a greater threat. Let's put our faith and trust in Germany to lead the way, to build the war machine. We can't follow Trump. That's the thinking. Here's von der Leyen from this morning, clip 10.
Ladies and gentlemen, whether on trade or business, capital or energy, Europe needs an urgency mindset. Our starting point is good. We are home to global champions in fields ranging from wind power to next generation batteries, from aerospace to the industrial machines that are essential to build the chips and advanced weapons. Our companies are taking up AI at the same pace as their US peers. Europe is in the race for the key technologies of tomorrow. But as global competition gets ruthless, we must show real ambition, especially in those sectors vital for our independence. Take defense, for example. We have done more on defense in the last year than in decades before.
1 year since Donald Trump was inaugurated for his second term as president. And in 1 year, Europe has done more, as you heard there, on defense than in decades. That's the real significance of Donald Trump's first year, this second term. He's done more, as I said earlier, to single-handedly accelerate the formation of this empire. As Richard Palmer asked, did the world turn this January 16? He referred back to Malachi's message and the statement my father made about how that date and the time around it was going to take on even greater significance going forward. This year, says Mr. Palmer, the events of January 16 and 17 could mark a huge shift in world events. Within a few months, we may look back at this weekend as the moment the world changed. And then he just takes you right through it. The dispute over Greenland, which European nations, as Farage noted, they view it as a hostile act. Suddenly Europe is very concerned about its borders. About this Danish, what do you call it, a colony? I don't know. But they're very concerned. Then they send a few troops over there and people laugh and they're humiliated, just like they were last summer when they came to that trade deal. And now it looks like Donald Trump may back out of it because it's just, he's done with it. He wants another deal. He's going to impose tariffs on them. I mean, when you're losing Nigel Farage and then this other guy at the Free Press, says here, President Trump announced 10%. Well, it takes you through some of the details that I've already covered on this show. I'll just draw attention to Mr. Armstrong's quote from 1978. He said, the Europeans are far more disturbed about their safety and relying on United States military power to protect them than Americans realize. Now, how could he say that 40, 50 years ago? They have to go it alone. That's exactly what von der Leyen was saying this morning. And now there's a consensus. Now everybody's on board. If this past year was as dramatic and as fast-paced from a prophetic standpoint as it was, what's the next year going to be like? What's in store for us in 2026? What will the second year of a Trump presidency look like? What will the world look like a year from now? The world's largest trade deal, that's the next section in Mr. Palmer's article, the largest trade deal in history with the Mercosur, there we go. I got to practice that. You know, go Google it. It's like a half a page, the definition. Let's simplify. I think it's an acronym. Isn't it an acronym? Simplify. How about four letters? How about three letters? That's my suggestion for the day. Europe will draw a lot of power from its relationship with Latin America. Mr. Armstrong foretold that this combined power block would overtake the United States. His Plain Truth magazine stated, I gave you this quote yesterday, but it's worth repeating, in 1962, that the United States is going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocks, Europe and Latin America, mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce. That happened on Saturday. That happened just a few days ago after 25 years of negotiations. And now it's happening. Mr. Armstrong prophesied precisely what we're seeing happening today. This is a union that will become stronger than Russia and China. It will be stronger than the U.S. That's the trade. And, you know, Jeroboam people could scoff or be skeptical of these prophecies all they want. The Bible says there's going to be scoffers in the last days. But this is where it's headed. And you can just take a year, you know, snapshot and see the direction. You can see what's ahead. We've got to look at the long view. We've got to be looking for those sparks that are going to set off the ticking time bomb, the explosion. Breaking with Israel, President Trump, I mentioned some of this yesterday, President Trump announced a new Board of Peace on January 15, and then there's the new National Committee for the Administration of Gaza. And that includes Turkey's foreign minister and a senior Qatari official. Both these nations support Hamas. Israel is not represented in this administration. Israel, which had total control of Gaza just 21 years ago, now they're not even a part of the solution. After Gaza, after Hamas carried out a 9/11 scale massacre in little Israel, and Israel has no say. Well, prophecy says that that brotherly band is going to be severed. And little Israel, if you can believe it, is going to reach out to the new German war machine for an alliance, for protection. That's not going to work out very well. Richard Palmer's article says, in his book, America Under Attack, Mr. Fleury shows how America has been weakened within before it will suffer attack from without. He also traces the attack to its true cause, with evil increasing in our world. I've seen more and more commentators talking about the fact that there is a spiritual dimension to human life. That's quoting from my father in America Under Attack. This book right here, I mentioned it last week after we went a few months, it seems anyway, without referring to it. But if you haven't read this, it's still very relevant to what we're seeing today. I mean, there's another Antiochus that comes again with the same spirit as the last one we saw. And he's going to emerge out of Europe. He mentions here Revelation 12:9. And then concludes with a day of hope. I mean, there is hope for peace. And it's not wrong to talk about, you know, seeking peace. But to see yourself as a peacemaker, or even more, the Prince of Peace, that's a title that belongs to God. Only God and God's family can bring peace to this earth. And it is coming. And the signs that we're very close to it are all around us, as we cover every day on this show. Speaking of this show, that's all that we have time for. It's the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.